exploiting wormholes. One possibility is that the Big Bang was so explosive that it might have inflated tiny wormholes that existed in the infant universe 13.8 billion years ago. When the universe began to expand exponentially, these wormholes may have expanded with it. This means that although at present no one has ever seen one, they might be a naturally occurring phenomenon. Some physicists have speculated about how to go about finding one in space. To find a naturally occurring wormhole, which is the subject of several Star Trek episodes, one would look for an object that distorts the passage of starlight in a particular way. Perhaps so it resembles a sphere or a ring. Another possibility, also explored by Kip Thorne and his collaborators, is to find a tiny one in the vacuum and then expand it. Our latest understanding of space is that it may be frothing with tiny wormholes as universes spring into existence and then vanish again. So, if you had enough energy, you might be able to manipulate a pre-existing wormhole and inflate it. There is one problem, however, with all these proposals. The wormhole is surrounded by particles of gravity, called gravitons. As you are about to pass through it, you will encounter quantum corrections in the form of gravitational radiation. Normally, quantum corrections are small and can be ignored, but calculations show that these corrections are infinite as you pass through a wormhole, so the radiation would likely be lethal. Also, the radiation levels are so strong that the wormhole may close, making a passage impossible. There is a debate among physicists today about how dangerous it might be to travel through a wormhole. Einstein's relativity is no longer of any use as we enter the wormhole. Quantum effects are so large that we need a higher theory to take us through. Currently, the only one capable of doing this is string theory, which is one of the strangest ever proposed in physics. Quantum fuzziness. What theory can unify general relativity and the quantum theory at the Planck energy? Einstein spent the last 30 years of his life chasing after a theory of everything that could allow him to read the mind of God, but he failed. This remains one of the biggest questions facing modern physics. The solution will reveal some of the most important secrets of the universe. And using it, we may be able to explore time travel, wormholes, higher dimensions, parallel universes, even what happened before the Big Bang. Furthermore, the answer will determine whether or not humanity can travel the universe at faster-than-light velocities. To understand this, we have to understand the basis of the quantum theory, the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. This innocent-sounding principle states that no matter how sensitive your instruments, you can never know both the velocity and position of any subatomic particle, say an electron. There is always a quantum fuzziness. Thus, a startling picture emerges. An electron is actually a collection of different states, with each state describing an electron in a different position with a different velocity. Einstein hated this principle. He believed in objective reality, which is the common sense notion that objects exist in definite, well-defined states and that you can determine the exact position and velocity of any particle. But quantum theory states otherwise. When you look in a mirror, you are not seeing yourself as you really are. You are made up of a vast collection of waves. So the image you see in the mirror is actually an average, a composite of all these waves. There is even a small probability that some of these waves can spread out all over your room and into space. In fact, some of your waves can even spread out to Mars or beyond. One problem we give our PhD students is to calculate the probability that some of your waves spread out to Mars, and that one day you will get out of bed and wake up on the red planet. These waves are called quantum corrections or quantum fluctuations. Normally, these corrections are small, so the common sense notion is perfectly fine, since we are a collection of atoms and can only see averages. But at the subatomic level, these quantum corrections can be large, so that electrons can be several places at the same time and exist in parallel states. Newton would be shocked if you explained to him how the electrons in transistors can exist in parallel states. These corrections make modern electronics possible. So if we could somehow turn off this quantum fuzziness, all of these marvels of technology would stop functioning and society would be thrown almost 100 years into the past before the electric age. Fortunately, physicists can calculate these quantum corrections for subatomic particles and make predictions for them, some of which are valid to incredible accuracy, to one part in 10 trillion. In fact, the quantum theory is so accurate that it is perhaps the most successful theory of all time. Nothing else can match its accuracy when applied to ordinary matter. It may be the most bizarre theory ever proposed in history. Einstein once said that the more successful the quantum theory becomes, the stranger it becomes. But it has one small thing going for it. It is undeniably correct. So the Heisenberg uncertainty principle forces us to reevaluate what we know about reality. One result is that black holes cannot really be black. Quantum theory says that there must be quantum corrections to pure blackness, so black holes are actually gray. And they emit a faint radiation called Hawking radiation. Many textbooks say that at the center of a black hole, or at the beginning of time, there is a singularity, a point of infinite gravity. But infinite gravity violates the uncertainty principle. In other words, there is no such thing as a singularity. It is simply a word we invent to disguise our ignorance about what occurs when the equations don't work out. In the quantum theory, there are no singularities because there is a fuzziness that prevents knowing the precise location of the black hole. Similarly, it is often stated that a pure vacuum is a state of pure nothingness. The concept of zero violates the uncertainty principle, so there is no such thing as pure nothingness. Instead, the vacuum is a cauldron of virtual matter and antimatter particles constantly springing in and out of existence. And there is no such thing as absolute zero, the temperature at which all motion stops. Even as we approach it, atoms continue to move slightly, which is called the zero-point energy. When we try to formulate a quantum theory of gravity, a problem occurs, however. The quantum corrections to Einstein's theory are described by particles we call gravitons. Just like a photon is a particle of light, a graviton is a particle of gravity. Gravitons are so elusive that they have never been seen in the laboratory. But physicists are confident that they do exist, since they are essential to any quantum theory of gravity. When we try to calculate with these gravitons, however, we find that quantum corrections are infinite. Quantum gravity is riddled with corrections that blow up the equations. Some of the greatest minds in physics have tried to solve this problem, but all have failed. So this is one goal of modern physics, to create a quantum theory of gravity where the quantum corrections are finite and calculable. In other words, Einstein's theory of gravity allows for the formation of wormholes, which may one day give us shortcuts through the galaxy. But Einstein's theory cannot tell us if these wormholes are stable or not. To calculate these quantum corrections, we need a theory that combines relativity with the quantum theory. String theory. So far, the leading and only candidate to solve this problem is something called string theory, which says that all matter and energy in the universe is composed of tiny strings. Each vibration of the string corresponds to a different subatomic particle. So the electron is not really a point particle. If you had a super microscope, you would see that it is not a particle at all, but a vibrating string. The electron appears to be a point particle only because the string is so tiny. If the string vibrates at a different frequency, it corresponds to a different particle, such as a quark, mu meson, neutrino, photon, and so on. That is why physicists have discovered such a ridiculous number of subatomic particles. There are literally hundreds, all because they are just different vibrations of a tiny string. In this way, string theory can explain the quantum theory of subatomic particles. According to string theory, as the string moves, it forces space-time to curl up exactly as Einstein predicted. And hence, it unifies Einstein's theory and the quantum theory in a very pleasing fashion. This means that subatomic particles are just like musical notes. The universe is a symphony of strings. Physics represents the harmonies of these notes, and the mind of God that Einstein chased after for so many decades is cosmic music resonating through hyperspace. So how does string theory banish the quantum corrections that have bedeviled physicists for decades? String theory possesses something called supersymmetry. For every particle, there is a partner, a superparticle, or sparticle. For example, the partner of the electron is the selectron. The partner of the quark is the squark. So we have two types of quantum corrections, those coming from ordinary particles and those from the sparticles. The beauty of string theory is that the quantum corrections coming from these two sets of particles exactly cancel each other out. Thus, string theory gives us a simple but elegant way to eliminate these infinite quantum corrections. They vanish because the theory reveals a new symmetry that gives the theory its mathematical power and its beauty. To artists, beauty may be an ethereal quantity that they aspire to capture in their works. But to a theoretical physicist, beauty is symmetry. It is also an absolute necessity when probing the ultimate nature of space and time. For example, if I have a snowflake and rotate it by 60 degrees, the snowflake remains the same. In the same way, a kaleidoscope creates beautiful patterns because it uses mirrors to repeatedly duplicate an image so it fills up 360 degrees. We say that the snowflake and kaleidoscope both possess radial symmetry. That is, they remain the same after a certain radial rotation. Let's say I have an equation containing many subatomic particles, and then I shuffle or rearrange them among one another. If the equation remains the same after interchanging these particles, I would then say that the equation has a symmetry. The power of symmetry. Symmetry is not just a matter of aesthetics. It is a powerful way to eliminate imperfections and anomalies in your equations. If you rotate the snowflake, you can rapidly spot any defects by comparing the rotated version with the original. If they are not the same, then you have a problem that needs correcting. In the same way, when constructing a quantum equation, we often find that a theory is infested with tiny anomalies and divergences. But if the equation has a symmetry, then these defects are eliminated. In the same way, supersymmetry takes care of the infinities and imperfections often found in a quantum theory. As a bonus, it turns out that supersymmetry is the largest symmetry ever found in physics. Supersymmetry can take all known subatomic particles and mix them together or rearrange them while preserving the original equation. In fact, supersymmetry is so powerful that it can take Einstein's theory, including the graviton and the subatomic particles of the Standard Model, and rotate them or interchange them. This gives us a pleasing and natural way to unify Einstein's theory of gravity and subatomic particles. String theory is like a gigantic cosmic snowflake, except that each prong of the snowflake represents the entire set of Einstein's equations and the Standard Model of subatomic particles. So each prong of the snowflake represents all the particles of the universe. As we rotate the snowflake, all the particles of the universe are interchanged. Some physicists have noted that even if Einstein had never been born, and billions of dollars were never spent on smashing atoms to create the Standard Model, then all of 20th century physics might have been discovered if you simply possessed string theory. Most important, Supersymmetry cancels the quantum corrections of particles with those of sparticles, leaving us with a finite theory of gravity. That is the miracle of string theory. This also explains the answer to the question most often heard about string theory. Why does it exist in 10 dimensions? Why not 13 or 20? This is because the number of particles in string theory can vary with the dimensionality of space-time. In higher dimensions, we have more particles, since there are more ways in which particles can vibrate. When we try to cancel the quantum corrections from the particles against the corrections from the sparticles, we find that this cancellation can happen only in 10 dimensions. Usually, mathematicians create new imaginative structures that physicists later incorporate into their theories. For example, the theory of curved surfaces was worked out by mathematicians in the 19th century and was later incorporated into Einstein's theory of gravity in 1915. But this time, the reverse happened. String theory has opened up so many new branches of mathematics that the mathematicians were startled. Young, aspiring mathematicians, who usually scorn applications of their discipline, have to learn string theory if they want to be on the cutting edge. Although Einstein's theory allows for the possibility of wormholes and faster-than-light travel, you need string theory to calculate how stable these wormholes are in the presence of quantum corrections. In summary, these quantum corrections are infinite. So removing these infinities is one of the fundamental problems in physics. String theory eliminates these quantum corrections because it has two types of quantum corrections that precisely cancel each other. This precise cancellation between particles and sparticles is due to supersymmetry. However, as elegant and powerful as string theory is, it is not enough. It must ultimately face the final challenge, which is experiment. Criticisms of string theory. Although this picture is compelling and persuasive, there are valid criticisms one can make of the theory. First, since the energy at which string theory, or any theory of everything for that matter, unifies all of physics is the Planck energy, no machine on Earth is powerful enough to rigorously test it. A direct test would involve creating a baby universe in the laboratory, which is obviously out of the question given current technology. Second, like any physical theory, it has more than one solution. For example, Maxwell's equations, which govern light, have an infinite number of solutions. This is not a problem because at the very beginning of any experiment, we specify what we are studying, whether it's a light bulb, laser, or a TV. Then later, given these initial conditions, we solve the equations of Maxwell. But if we have a theory of the universe, then what are its initial conditions? Physicists believe that a theory of everything should dictate its own initial state. That is, they would prefer that the initial conditions of the Big Bang somehow emerge from the theory itself. String theory, however, does not tell you which of its many solutions is the correct one for our universe. And without initial conditions, string theory contains an infinite number of parallel universes, called the multiverse, each one as valid as the next. So we have an embarrassment of riches, with string theory predicting not only our own familiar universe, but perhaps an infinite number of other equally valid alien universes as well. Third, perhaps the most startling prediction of string theory is that the universe is not four-dimensional at all, but exists in 10 dimensions. In all of physics, nowhere have we seen a prediction this bizarre, a theory of space-time that selects out its own dimensionality. This was so strange that many physicists at first dismissed it as science fiction. When string theory was first proposed, the fact that it could only exist in 10 dimensions was a source of ridicule. Nobel laureate Richard Feynman, for example, would tease John Schwartz, one of the founders of string theory, by asking him, "So, John, how many dimensions are we in today?" Living in hyperspace. We know that any object in our universe can be described by three numbers, length, width, and height. If we add time, then four numbers can describe any event in the universe. For example, if I want to meet someone in New York City, I might say that we should meet at 42nd Street and 5th Avenue on the 10th floor at noon. But to a mathematician, the need for only three or four coordinates might seem arbitrary, since there is nothing special about three or four dimensions. Why should the most fundamental feature of the physical universe be described by such ordinary numbers? So mathematicians have no problem with string theory. But to visualize these higher dimensions, physicists often use analogies. When I was a child, I used to spend many hours gazing at the Japanese tea garden in San Francisco. Watching the fish swim in the shallow pond, I asked myself a question that only a child would ask. What would it be like to be a fish? What a strange world they would see, I thought. They would think the universe was only two-dimensional. They could only swim in this limited space by moving sideways, but never up or down. Any fish who dared mention a third dimension beyond the pond would be considered a crackpot. I then imagined there was a fish living in the pond who would scoff any time someone mentioned hyperspace, since the universe was just what you could touch and feel, nothing more. Then I imagined grabbing that fish and lifting him into the world of up. What would he see? He would see beings moving without fins, a new law of physics, beings breathing without water, a new law of biology. Then I imagined putting the scientist fish back into the pond, and he would have to explain to the other fish the incredible creatures that live in the world of up. Similarly, perhaps we are the fish. If string theory is proven correct, it means that there are unseen dimensions beyond our familiar four-dimensional world. But where are these higher dimensions? One possibility is that 6 of the 10 original dimensions have curled up, so they cannot be seen anymore. Think of taking a sheet of paper and rolling it up into a tight tube. The original sheet was two-dimensional, but the rolling up process has created a one-dimensional tube. From a distance, you only see the one-dimensional tube, but in reality, it is still two-dimensional. In the same way, string theory says that the universe was originally 10-dimensional, but for some reason, 6 of these dimensions curled up, leaving us with the illusion that our world has only 4. Although this feature of string theory seems fantastic, efforts are underway to actually measure these higher dimensions. But how do higher dimensions help string theory unify relativity and quantum mechanics? If you try to unify the gravitational, nuclear, and electromagnetic forces into a single theory, you find that there is not enough room in four dimensions to do this. They are like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle that don't fit together. But once you start to add more and more dimensions, you find enough room to assemble these lower theories, like matching jigsaw pieces together to make the whole. For example, think of a two-dimensional world of flatlanders, who, like Cookie Men, can only move left or right, but never up. Imagine that there was once a beautiful three-dimensional crystal that exploded, showering fragments onto flatland. Over the years, the flatlanders have reassembled this crystal into two large fragments. But as hard as they try, they are unable to fit these last two fragments together. Then one day, a flatlander makes the outrageous proposal that if they move one fragment up into the unseen third dimension, then the two fragments would fit together and form a beautiful three-dimensional crystal. So the key to recreating the crystal was moving the fragments through the third dimension. By analogy, these two fragments are relativity theory and the quantum theory. The crystal is string theory, and the explosion was the Big Bang. Even though string theory fits the data neatly, we still need to test it. Although, as discussed, a direct test is not possible, most physics is done indirectly. For example, we know that the sun is made mainly of hydrogen and helium, yet no one has ever visited the sun. We know the sun's composition because we analyze it indirectly, looking at sunlight through a prism, which breaks it up into bands of colors. By studying these bands within the rainbow, we can identify the fingerprint of hydrogen and helium. In fact, helium was not found on Earth first. In 1868, scientists discovered evidence of a strange new element when analyzing sunlight during an eclipse, which was christened helium, meaning metal from the sun. It wasn't until 1895 that direct evidence of helium was discovered on the Earth, when scientists realized it was a gas and not a metal. Dark matter and strings. In the same way, string theory might be proven via a variety of indirect tests. Since each vibration of the string corresponds to a particle, we can, in our particle accelerators, search for entirely new particles that represent higher octaves of the string. The hope is that by smashing protons together at trillions of volts, you briefly create a new particle among the debris that is predicted by string theory. This, in turn, may help explain one of the great unsolved problems in astronomy. In the 1960s, when astronomers examined the rotation of the Milky Way galaxy, they found something strange. It was rotating so fast that by Newton's laws, it should fly apart. Yet the galaxy has been stable for about 10 billion years. In fact, the galaxy rotated about 10 times faster than it should, according to traditional Newtonian mechanics. This posed a tremendous problem. Either Newton's equations were wrong, which was almost unthinkable, or there was an invisible halo of unknown matter surrounding the galaxies, increasing their mass sufficiently for gravity to hold them together. This meant that perhaps the pictures we see of gorgeous galaxies with their beautiful spiral arms are incomplete, that they are actually surrounded by a gigantic invisible halo that is 10 times more massive than the visible galaxy. Since photographs of galaxies only show the beautiful swirling mass of stars, whatever is holding the mass together must not interact with light. It must be invisible. Astrophysicists dubbed this missing mass dark matter. Its existence forced them to revise their theories, which said that the universe is made mainly of atoms. We now have maps of dark matter throughout the universe. Although it is invisible, it bends starlight just as anything with mass should. Therefore, by analyzing the distortion of starlight surrounding galaxies, we can use computers to calculate the presence of dark matter and map its distribution across the universe. Sure enough, this map shows that most of the total mass of a galaxy exists in this form. In addition to being invisible, dark matter has gravity, but you can't hold it in your hand, since it does not interact with atoms at all. Because it is electrically neutral, it will pass through your hand, the floor, and through the crust of the Earth. It would oscillate between New York and Australia as if the Earth did not exist at all, except that it would be bound by Earth's gravity. So although dark matter is invisible, it still interacts via gravity with other particles. One theory is that dark matter is a higher vibration of the superstring. The leading candidate is the superpartner of the photon, which is called the photino, or little photon. It has all the right properties to be dark matter. It is invisible because it does not interact with light, and yet it has weight and is stable. There are several ways to prove this conjecture. The first is to create dark matter directly with the Large Hadron Collider by smashing protons into each other. For a brief instant of time, a particle of dark matter would be formed inside the accelerator. If this is possible, it would have enormous repercussions for science. It would represent the first time in history that a new form of matter has been found that is not based on atoms. If the LHC is not powerful enough to produce dark matter, then perhaps the ILC can. There also is another way to prove this conjecture. The Earth is moving in a wind of this invisible dark matter. The hope is that a dark matter particle may smash into a proton inside a particle detector, creating a shower of subatomic particles that might be photographed. At present, there are physicists around the world patiently waiting to find the signature of a collision between matter and dark matter in their detectors. There is a Nobel Prize waiting for the first physicist to do so. If dark matter is found, either with particle accelerators or with ground-based sensors, we will be able to compare its properties with those predicted by string theory. In this way, we will have evidence to evaluate the validity of the theory. Although finding dark matter would be a great step toward proving string theory, other proofs are possible. For example, Newton's law of gravity governs the motion of large objects like stars and planets, but little is known about the force of gravity acting over small distances, like a few inches or feet. Since string theory postulates higher dimensions, this means that Newton's famous inverse square law, that gravity diminishes in proportion with the square of the distance, should be violated at small distances because Newton's law is predicated on three dimensions. If space were four-dimensional, for instance, then gravity should diminish in proportion to the inverse cube of the distance. So far, tests of Newton's law of gravity have not shown any evidence of a higher dimension, but physicists aren't giving up. Another possible avenue is to send gravity wave detectors into space. The Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, LIGO, based in Louisiana and Washington State, was successful in picking up gravity waves from colliding black holes in 2016 and colliding neutron stars in 2017. A modified version of the space-based laser interferometer space antenna, LISA, may be able to detect gravity waves from the instant of the Big Bang. The hope is that one might be able to run the videotape backward and make conjectures about the nature of the pre-Big Bang era. This would allow a crude test of some of the predictions of string theory concerning the pre-Big Bang universe. String theory and wormholes. Still other tests of string theory may involve finding other exotic particles predicted by the theory, such as micro black holes, which resemble subatomic particles. We have seen how physics allows us to speculate about civilizations far into the future, making reasonable conjectures based on their energy consumption. Civilizations can be expected to evolve from a Type 1 planetary civilization to a Type 2 stellar civilization, and finally to a Type 3 galactic civilization. A galactic civilization, in turn, is likely to explore the galaxy via von Neumann probes, or by laser porting their consciousness across the galaxy. The key point is that a Type 3 civilization may be able to access the Planck energy, the point where space-time becomes unstable and faster than light travel might be possible. But to calculate the physics of faster than light travel, we need a theory that goes beyond Einstein's theory, which might well be string theory. The hope is that using string theory, we will be able to calculate the quantum corrections necessary to analyze exotic phenomena, such as time travel, interdimensional travel, wormholes, and what happened before the Big Bang. For example, assume that a Type 3 civilization is capable of manipulating black holes and thereby creating a gateway to a parallel universe through a wormhole. Without string theory, it is impossible to calculate what happens when you enter. Will it explode? Will gravitational radiation close it just as you enter it? Will you be able to pass through it and live to tell about it? String theory should be capable of calculating how much gravitational radiation you would encounter when you pass through the wormhole and answer these questions. Another hotly debated question among physicists is what happens if you enter a wormhole and go backward in time. If you then kill your grandfather before you were born, then you have a paradox. How can you exist at all if you just killed your ancestor? Einstein's theory actually allows for time travel, if negative energy exists, but says nothing about how to resolve these paradoxes. String theory, because it is a finite theory in which everything can be calculated, should be able to resolve all these mind-twisting paradoxes. My own strictly personal opinion is that the river of time forks into two rivers when you enter a time machine. In other words, the timeline splits. This means that you have killed someone else's grandfather who looks just like your own grandfather, but exists in another timeline in an alternate universe. So the multiverse resolves all time paradoxes. At present, however, because of the complexity of the mathematics of string theory, physicists have not been able to apply it to these questions. This is a mathematical problem, not an experimental one. So perhaps one day an enterprising physicist will be able to definitively calculate the properties of wormholes and hyperspace. Instead of idly speculating about faster-than-light travel, a physicist using string theory has the ability to determine whether this might be possible. But we will have to wait until the theory is sufficiently understood to make this determination. End of the diaspora. So there is a possibility that a Type 3 civilization may be able to use a quantum theory of gravity to achieve faster-than-light-speed spaceships. But what are the implications of this for humanity? Earlier, we noted that a Type 2 civilization, bound by the speed of light, may establish space colonies that eventually branch off, creating many distinct genetic lineages, which may eventually lose all contact with the mother planet. The question remains, what happens when a Type 3 civilization masters the Planck energy and begins to make contact with these branches of humanity? History may repeat itself. For example, the Great Diaspora ended with the coming of the airplane and modern technology, giving us a rapid international transportation network. Today, we can take a short plane trip over continents that once took our ancestors tens of thousands of years to cross. In the same way, when we make the transition from a Type 2 civilization to a Type 3 civilization, we will, by definition, have enough power to explore the Planck energy, the point at which space-time becomes unstable. If we assume that this makes faster-than-light travel possible, it means that a Type 3 civilization might be able to unify the various Type 2 colonies that have spread out across the galaxy. Given our common human heritage, it may make possible the creation of a new galactic civilization, as envisioned by Asimov. As we have heard earlier, the amount of genetic divergence that humanity may experience over several tens of thousands of years in the future is roughly the same as the divergence that has already occurred since the Great Diaspora. The key point is that we have maintained our humanity throughout. A young child born in one culture can easily grow up and mature in another totally different culture, even if the two cultures may be separated by a vast cultural chasm. This also means that Type 3 archaeologists, curious about ancient human migrations, may try to retrace the ancient migration routes of various branches of Type 2 civilizations across the galaxy. Galactic archaeologists may look for signs of various ancient Type 2 civilizations. In the Foundation Saga, our heroes are in search of the ancestral planet that gave birth to the Galactic Empire, whose name and location were lost in the chaos of galactic prehistory. Given that the human population numbers in the trillions, with millions of inhabited planets, this seems like a hopeless task. But by exploring the most ancient planets in the galaxy, they find ruins of the earliest planetary colonies. They see how planets were abandoned because of wars, disease, and other calamities. Likewise, a Type 3 civilization may emerge from a Type 2 civilization and try to retrace the various branches that were explored centuries earlier by sub-light-speed spaceships. In the same way that our current civilization is enriched by the presence of so many different types of cultures, each with a different history and perspective, a Type 3 civilization may be enriched by interacting with the many divergent civilizations that emerged during a Type 2 civilization. So the creation of faster-than-light spaceships may make the dream of Asimov come true, unifying humanity into one galactic civilization. As Sir Martin Rees has said, if humans avoid self-destruction, the post-human era beckons. Life from Earth could spread through the entire galaxy, evolving into a teeming complexity far beyond what we can even conceive. If so, our tiny planet, this pale blue dot floating in space, could be the most important place in the entire galaxy. The first interstellar voyagers from Earth would have a mission that would resonate through the entire galaxy and beyond. But eventually, any advanced civilization will have to face the ultimate challenge to their existence, which is the end of the universe itself. We have to ask the question, can an advanced civilization with all its vast technology evade the death of everything there is? Perhaps the only hope for intelligent life is to evolve into a Type 4 civilization. Some say the world will end in fire. Some say in ice. From what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. Robert Frost, 1920. Eternity is an awful long time, especially towards the end. Woody Allen. Chapter 14, Leaving the Universe. The Earth is dying. In the movie Interstellar, a strange blight has hit the planet, causing crops to fail and agriculture to collapse. People are starving. Civilization is slowly crumbling as it faces a devastating famine. Matthew McConaughey plays a former NASA astronaut who is given a dangerous mission. Earlier, a wormhole mysteriously opened up near Saturn. It is a gateway that will transport anyone who enters it to a distant part of the galaxy, where there might be new inhabitable worlds. Desperate to save humanity, he volunteers to enter the wormhole and search for a new home for humanity among the stars. Meanwhile, back on Earth, scientists are desperately trying to find the secret of the wormhole. Who made it? And why did it appear just as humanity was about to perish? Slowly, the truth dawns on the scientists. The technology to make this wormhole is millions of years more advanced than ours. The beings who made it are actually our descendants. The creators are so advanced that they live in hyperspace, beyond our familiar universe. They have built a gateway to the past, to send advanced technology to save their ancestors, us. By saving humanity, they will actually save themselves. According to Kip Thorne, who, in addition to being a physicist, was one of the producers of the film, the inspiration for the physics behind the movie comes from string theory. If we survive, one day we will face a similar crisis, except this time, the universe is dying. One day, in the far future, the universe will go cold and dark. Stars will cease to shine as the universe is plunged into a big freeze. All life will cease to exist when the universe itself dies, eventually reaching near absolute zero in temperature. But the question is, are there any loopholes? Can we avoid this cosmic doom? Can we, like Matthew McConaughey, find salvation in hyperspace? In order to understand how the universe might die, it is important to analyze the predictions of the far future given to us by Einstein's theory of gravity and then analyze the startling new revelations that have been made in the last decade. According to these equations, there are three possibilities for the ultimate fate of the universe. Big crunch, big freeze, or big rip. The first is the big crunch, when the expansion of the universe slows down, stops, and reverses itself. In this scenario, the galaxies in the heavens will eventually halt and begin to contract. Temperatures will rise dramatically as the distant stars come closer and closer. Eventually, all the stars coalesce into a primordial superheated mass. In some scenarios, there might even be a big bounce, and the Big Bang could start all over again. The second is the Big Freeze, when the growth of the universe continues unabated. The second law of thermodynamics states that total entropy always increases, so eventually the universe will grow cold as matter and heat become more diffuse. The stars will cease to shine, the night sky would become totally black, and temperatures would plunge to near absolute zero, when even molecules cease almost all their motion. For decades, astronomers have been trying to determine which scenario determines the fate of our universe. This is done by calculating its average density. If the universe is dense enough, then there is enough matter and gravity to attract the distant galaxies and reverse the expansion, so that the Big Crunch becomes a realistic possibility. If the universe lacks sufficient mass, then there is not enough gravity to reverse the expansion, and the universe goes into a Big Freeze. The critical density separating these two scenarios is roughly 6 hydrogen atoms per cubic meter. But in 2011, the Nobel Prize in Physics was given to Saul Perlmutter, Adam Riess, and Brian Schmidt for a discovery that overturned decades of cherished belief. They found that the universe, instead of slowing down in its expansion, was actually speeding up. The universe is 13.8 billion years old, but about 5 billion years ago, it began to accelerate exponentially. Today, the universe is expanding in a runaway fashion. Scientific American claimed the astrophysical community was stunned to learn that the universe was driving itself apart. These astronomers came to this astounding conclusion by analyzing supernova explosions in distant galaxies to determine the rate at which the universe expanded billions of years ago. One type of supernova explosion, called Type 1A, has a fixed luminosity, so we can accurately measure its distance using its brightness. If one has a headlamp of known luminosity, it's easy to tell how far away it is. But if you don't know its brightness, it's difficult to tell its distance. A headlamp of known brightness is a standard candle. A Type 1A supernova acts as a standard candle, so it's easy to tell its distance. When analyzing these supernovae, scientists found that they were moving away from us, just as expected. But to their shock, they found that closer supernovae appeared to be moving away more rapidly than they should, indicating the rate of expansion was accelerating. So in addition to the Big Freeze and Big Crunch, a third alternative began to emerge from the data, the Big Rip, which is like the Big Freeze on steroids. It is a vastly accelerated time frame for the life cycle of the universe. In the Big Rip, the distant galaxies eventually move away from us so fast that they exceed the speed of light and disappear from view. This does not violate special relativity because it is space that is expanding faster than light. Material objects cannot move faster than light, but empty space can stretch and expand at any speed. This means that the night sky will become black because light from the distant galaxies is moving away so quickly it can't reach us. Eventually, this exponential expansion becomes so great that not only is the galaxy torn apart, the solar system is ripped apart, and the very atoms making up our bodies are also torn apart. Matter, as we know it, cannot exist in the final stages of the Big Rip. Scientific American writes, "Galaxies would be destroyed. The solar system would unbind, and eventually all the planets would burst asunder as the rapid expansion of space rips apart its very atoms. Finally, our universe would end in an explosion, a singularity of literally infinite energy." Bertrand Russell, the great British philosopher and mathematician, once wrote, "All the devotion, all the inspiration, all the noonday brightness of human genius are destined to extinction in the vast death of the solar system, and the whole temple of man's achievement must inevitably be buried beneath the debris of a universe in ruins. only within the scaffolding of these truths, only on the firm foundation of unyielding despair, can the soul's habitation henceforth be safely built. Russell wrote about a universe in ruins and unyielding despair in response to predictions by physicists of the Earth's eventual demise. But he did not foresee the coming of the space program. He did not foresee that advances in technology might allow us to escape the death of our planet. But although we might one day avoid the death of the sun with our spaceships, how will we avoid the death of the universe itself? Fire or ice? The ancients, in some sense, anticipated many of these violent scenarios. Every religion, it seems, has some mythology to explain the birth and death of the universe. In Norse mythology, the twilight of the gods is called Ragnarok, the day of reckoning, when the world is blanketed in unending snow and ice and the heavens freeze over. The world witnesses the final battle between the frost giants and the Norse gods of Asgard. In Christian mythology, we have Armageddon, when the forces of good and evil clash for the last time. The four horsemen of the apocalypse appear, foretelling the final judgment. In Hindu mythology, there is no final end of days at all. Instead, there is an unending series of cycles, each lasting about 8 billion years. But after thousands of years of speculation and wonder, science is beginning to understand how our world will evolve and eventually die. For the Earth, the future lies in fire. In 5 or so billion years, we will have the last nice day on our home planet. Then the sun will exhaust its hydrogen fuel and expand into a red giant star. Eventually, the sun will set the sky on fire. The oceans will boil, and the mountains will melt. The Earth will be engulfed by the sun, and will orbit like a burnt-out cinder within its fiery atmosphere. There is a biblical reference that says, from ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Physicists say, from stardust we came, to stardust we will return. The sun itself will suffer a different fate. After the red giant phase, it will eventually exhaust all its nuclear fuel, shrink, and go cold. It will become a small white dwarf star, about the size of the Earth, and eventually die as a dark dwarf star, a piece of nuclear waste drifting in the galaxy. Unlike our sun, the Milky Way galaxy will die in fire. About 4 billion years from now, it will collide with Andromeda, the nearest spiral galaxy. Andromeda is roughly twice the size of the Milky Way, so it will be a hostile takeover. Computer simulations of the collision show that the two galaxies will enter a death dance as they orbit around each other. Andromeda will rip off many of the arms of the Milky Way, dismembering it. The black holes at the center of both galaxies will orbit around each other and finally collide, merging into a bigger black hole, and a new galaxy will emerge from the collision, a giant elliptical galaxy. In each of these scenarios, it is important to realize that rebirth is also part of this cosmic cycle. Planets, stars, and galaxies get recycled. Our sun, for example, is probably a third-generation star. Each time a star explodes, the dust and gas it spews into space reseed the next generation of stars. Science also gives us an understanding of the life of the entire universe. Until recently, astronomers thought they understood its history and ultimate fate trillions of years into the future. They had speculated that it is evolving slowly in 5 epochs. 1. In the first epoch, the first billion years after the Big Bang, the universe was filled with hot, opaque clouds of ionic molecules, too hot for electrons and protons to condense into atoms. 2. In the second epoch, a billion years after the Big Bang, the universe cooled down enough so that atoms, stars, and galaxies could emerge from the chaos. Empty space suddenly became crystal clear, and stars lit up the universe for the first time. We are living in this era now. 3. In the third epoch, about 100 billion years after the Big Bang, the stars will have exhausted most of their nuclear fuel. The universe will consist mainly of small red dwarf stars, which burn so slowly that they can shine for trillions of years. 4. In the fourth epoch, trillions of years after the Big Bang, all the stars will finally burn out and the universe will go completely black. Only dead neutron stars and black holes remain. 5. In the fifth epoch, even black holes begin to evaporate and disintegrate, so the universe becomes a sea of nuclear waste and drifting subatomic particles. With the discovery of the accelerating universe, this entire scenario might be compressed into billions of years. The Big Rip upsets the entire apple cart. Dark energy. What is causing this sudden change in our understanding of the ultimate fate of the universe? According to Einstein's theory of relativity, there are two sources of energy that drive the evolution of the universe. The first is the curvature of space-time, which creates the familiar gravity fields surrounding the stars and galaxies. This curvature is what keeps our feet on the ground. This is the energy source most studied by astrophysicists. But there is also a second source of power, which is usually ignored. It is the energy of nothingness, the energy of the vacuum, called dark energy, not to be confused with dark matter. The very emptiness of space contains energy. The most recent calculations show that this dark energy acts like anti-gravity, and it is pushing the universe apart. The more the universe expands, the more dark energy there is, which causes it to expand even faster. At present, the best data indicate that about 69% of the matter/energy, since matter and energy are interchangeable, in the universe is contained in dark energy. By contrast, dark matter makes up about 26%. Atoms of hydrogen and helium make up about 5%, and higher elements, which make up the Earth and our own bodies, only make up a tiny 0.5%. So dark energy, which is pushing the galaxies away from us, is clearly the dominant force in the universe, much larger than the energy contained in the curvature of space-time. One of the central problems in all of cosmology is therefore to understand the origin of dark energy. Where does it come from? Will it ultimately destroy the universe? Usually, when we simply combine relativity and the quantum theory in a crude shotgun marriage, we can get a prediction for dark energy. But the resulting prediction is off by a factor of 10 to the 120th. Which is the largest mismatch in the history of science. Nowhere do we find a discrepancy this large. It indicates that something is terribly wrong with our understanding of the universe. So the unified field theory, instead of being a scientific curiosity, becomes essential to understanding how everything works. The solution to this question will tell us the fate of the universe and all intelligent creatures in it. Escape from apocalypse. Given that the fate of the universe is likely to die a cold death in the distant future, what can we do about it? Can these cosmic forces be reversed? There are at least three options. The first is to do nothing and let the life cycle of the universe play out. As it gets colder and colder, intelligent beings will adjust and think slower and slower. According to physicist Freeman Dyson, eventually, a simple thought may take millions of years, but these beings will never notice because all other beings will think slower as well. It would be possible to have intelligent conversations between these beings, even if it takes millions of years. So from this point of view, everything would seem normal. Living in such a cold world may actually be quite interesting. Quantum leaps, which are extremely unlikely in a human lifespan, may begin to occur routinely. Wormholes may open up and close before our eyes. Bubble universes may pop into and out of existence. These beings may see them all the time because their brains operate so slowly. However, this is only a temporary solution, because eventually molecular motion will become so slow that information cannot be transferred from one place to another. At this point, all activity, including thinking, no matter how slow, will cease. One desperate hope is that the acceleration caused by dark energy will suddenly disappear all by itself before this happens. Since no one knows,